methodics that I do my best. So I speak about
holography and relativity and the spoky ellipsoids. So I've been working in holography for a very long time, and it started with ordinary holography, and then I went to pulsed holography, and then I went to light-in-flight recording of light waves, and from that to relativity. It was a very smooth way, and I couldn't avoid getting into relativity. So this is exactly what I'm not going to speak about. This type of...
I think we're missing an animal sign up.
It's better that way. This type of equations that are very complicated. Instead, I will use the Moiré analogy in everything, in holography, in interferometry, and in relativity. You have already seen this Moiré analogy. Two beams, two laser beams intersect, and they produce interference fringes, which are absolutely analogous to these Moiré fringes. If they are both going in the same direction, as Sven-Göran showed to you, these fringes will be stationary. If one beam is going in that direction and the other is going in the opposite direction, these fringes will not be stationary anymore. They disappear, and instead we will get fringes perpendicular to these. This, instead of looking at straight beams from lasers, we look at the point source giving spherical waves like this. So this is one point source. And here are two such point sources put together. And again, we get Moiré fringes. This is a point source. This is another point source. These are named Young's fringes. These are the fringes we see in interferometry if you tilt one mirror, for instance. So these are very easy to see. But then there are also a set of ellipsoids here, much more difficult to see. These are the spoky ellipsoids. And those ellipsoids will appear stationary if this is a point source and this is a point sink. And what is a point sink? It's a point of observation, a point towards the waves go that we study. So if this is a point source and this is a point source, then we have the Young's fringes, as I said. If this is a point source and this is a point of observation, we instead have the ellipsoids. They are more difficult to see, and that's why I name them spoky ellipses. This is the same diagram again. Perhaps a little easier to see the ellipsoids here, ellipsoids like that. And these are not straight, really. They are hyperbolas, hyperboloids. If this is three-dimensional, the ellipses here are ellipsoids. So even if I follow like that, it's like an egg, a three-dimensional thing. Those are the ellipsoids. I based a diagram, which I named the hollow diagram, on these ellipsoids. And this I did in 1968. I presented this paper. And you see the ellipsoids here. And these ellipsoids, they have hunted me all the time. It must be about 30 or 40 years. I've all the time been studying these ellipses. So I'm rather crazy. And much people think so when I try to get my papers published. So this diagram I used to make holograms even of objects that are longer than the coherence length. I will go into that later on. It can also be used to evaluate interference fringes when an object has been moved, so therefore I get fringes. What is an ellipse? Well, you can draw an ellipse by taking a string, fix one end there, another end there, and have the string like that. And then you move your pen, and the pen will make an ellipse here. If you could move the pen in space, it will make an ellipsoid everywhere in space. So every point on this ellipse, there, the distance from A to that point and to B is constant, because it is a string length that is constant. So if you make a hologram and you have a laser here, the point A, the point of observation, which is one point on the holographic plate there, if this, for instance, is a reference mirror, then the light goes like that, and on every point on this ellipse, or ellipsoid in three dimensions, to every that point, the path length is the same. All are the same to that point. So therefore, if this is the reference mirror, that object can be holographed, but it cannot be holographed if it is closer to here, because then the path lengths are different, or if it is outside here, only if it is on this ellipse. And that is if the coherence length is extremely short. So if the coherence length is almost zero, this is true what I said. It could also be that the pulse from the laser was almost zero. Then also you can only image what is on this ellipsoid and nothing else. This started in a practical way, because I'm a mechanical engineer, so I should work on industrial products and things like that. So this is a machine tool, and I made a hologram of the machine tool, and this is one of the ellipses, and this is another of the ellipses, and this is a big tool that is about 2 meters high, and on that ellipse I put my reference mirror somewhere. And then I could make a hologram with a laser that was standing over here, illuminating in that direction. And I also had my holographic plate somewhere down there. So both observation and illumination was in this direction. And then that part is outside the ellipse, so that should be black. That part should also be black. But I have to accept that. So this was a problem making ordinary holographic. I did press something I shouldn't. Does it disappear automatically?
K?
Any K?
Yes, K. S-K. Yes,
back. Could someone tell me? That was easy. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's easier with transparencies on the overhead. I just move them away. So this is a machine, and there's a black part. It's the things that are outside the ellipse, and here another part that was outside the ellipse. So this was a problem with short coherence lasers, that you cannot image large objects, not even with ellipses, but quite a lot you can do. This is again the same thing. I have my reference mirror there, my laser there, my holographic plate here. This object could be imaged because it is between those two ellipses that represent the coherence length. But that object could not be holographically imaged, because this part is outside and this part is outside. So it might be useful to have these ellipses and look at them when you do holography. And it has been used to make holography of particles out in air, raindrops or any drops. You can say snowflakes, for instance. If I have the laser here, the reference mirror there, the point of observation here, then I can only record those snowflakes that are inside this ellipse here. That one can be recorded. This one is outside, that one is outside. So only that can be reconstructed. And that has been used just to study to study particles in fluid or in gas. This I made together with Emmett Lees here. We did it together in the States. And I give a very short pulse, and then we have this restriction. They only see objects that are intersected by this ellipse. So instead of saying this ellipse, the short coherence length is a large problem, a big problem. Instead I say it's an advantage. It's an advantage because I only see what is intersected by this ellipse. And that can be useful to measure the shape of objects. So what I see here are these spheres intersected really by ellipsoids, this of the surface of the ellipsoid. It intersects these like that. So this is named light in flight recording by holography, because we make a recording both of the object and of the intersecting ellipsoid. And in another example, which I always show, is the propeller intersected by these ellipsoids. So the ellipsoid, we can look at it as a flat surface, moves in this direction and starts to intersect the propeller. And what you see is intersection. So this is a way to study three-dimensional objects. I could let the ellipses move towards me. If the ellipses are large, we can make the approximation. It's a flat surface moving towards me. I was first at the bright point on my nose, and then it moves further away, and I will see intersections of my face in that way. But if I know that shape, not my face here, but the shape of the screen, I have a flat screen, then instead I see the shape of the ellipsoids or the wavefront. Which is it? I hoped it was a wavefront because I wanted to make the image of the wavefront. So this can be a wavefront moving towards a lens, still very much later, very short separations in time here. It's about picoseconds. Here it is first. Slightly later, it has moved through the lens and it's keeping out on the surface. Slightly later, it is focused here, moving towards the focal point somewhere around there. So it's a way to see light itself. And you see it in three dimensions, really. So sometimes we can name this type of holograms as four-dimensional holograms. It has a time and the ordinary three-dimensional shape. This is one way to make light-in-flight recordings. It is slightly more difficult than when I showed before. So this was the first I ever did in light-in-flight. A laser. In this case, I used a laser with a short coherence length. It was an argon laser, and we took out the etalon, so we had a coherence length about 3 centimeters. It illuminates a screen here, and on the screen I have a mirror. And as reference beam, I have one mirror, another mirror, and this is a holographic plate. And when I make that exposure, if I look through here, I see what happens first on the screen. If that was a beam moving in that direction, it was here. If I move my eye from there to there, I see at a later point of time, I see what's happening on the screen, and then the light has been reflected by the mirror, and you see that intersection. This is what I show here. So it's quite a lot of fun with using these methods. And the propeller I showed to you before, it was made in much a simpler way than the first. So this is a propeller. That's one mirror. That's another mirror. It's a holographic plate. That's a laser. I give a short pulse. It moves towards the propeller. At the same time, some of the light goes like this along the plate. And the laser recorded on the plate only what is happening at the propeller at a certain point of time. So if I study this part of the holographic plate, I see the intersection here. If I move my eye to there and look through the plate, I see this intersection. If I move eye to there, I see that intersection. So by moving my eye, I change time. Time is along the plate, as I said before. So that's the fourth dimension on the plate. So if I look closer to this, I could see here. We don't think about the equations. But this is a point source. This is a point of observation. And this is an experiment made in a foggy atmosphere, so you can see the wave as it is moving by. So the wave starts here, becomes greater and greater, and moves away. So then the wave is here, but what I see is the wave being there. The true wave is here, but it is vertical because it comes from a point. The wave I see here is a part of an ellipsoid, the ellipsoid with those two focal points. So this is to show what happens. So do I see a wave? Do I see a spherical wave? Or do I see an ellipsoidal wave? That's the discussion. To make it simple, when I made this image of the wavefront going through the lens, I put the screen like that. So the screen is almost perpendicular to the line of sight because this is a point of observation. So it's here comes the spherical wave in this direction, and there I study it. And because this distance is almost constant along the screen, because the screen is almost perpendicular to this line, therefore I'm quite sure I see the true thing. But in other cases, when this length changes for different directions, then it will destroy, it will distort the view of the wavefront. So to study this, we made this experiment. We put a screen at a large angle like that. The reference mirror, point source, point of observation. So what I will see on this screen has to be the intersection of a flat surface by an ellipsoid. There should be no discussion of that, I hope. So there will be an ellipse here, because intersection between a flat surface and ellipsoid should be an ellipse. This I tried to publish, in Applied Optics four times, and the reader said that it's not true. It isn't an ellipse. I got very surprised. Of course it isn't. It can't be anything else. But that is said four times, and then I withdraw it and tried it in other papers. I think I knew who the reader was, but I won't say that. he said it can't be as simple as an ellipse, but it has to be a fourth grade equation. Where he got that from, I do not know. So we did this experiment. And we did it with Sven-Göran Pettersson. And we didn't have a short pulse laser at that time. We didn't use a laser at all. Well, we used the diode laser that had a very short coherence length. So this is, when it has a short coherence length, it repeats. So we got one exposure there, another exposure here. But if you follow this weak thing here, do you think this is an ellipse? I wouldn't say. It looks very circular. And to test it, I put the circle from my computer here, and you see, it isn't an ellipse. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Applied Optics was right. Maybe everything is silly. So that had to be discussed. And I was really, had a lot of problems about that. Now, this I did all by myself. a very nice man, a very clever man. And what I'm going to do is to speak about the relations between holography and relativity. And when I do that, I get all the equations I find are exactly the same as equations published by Einstein. And the distortions of the object I get are the same distortions as published before. But I do get some more distortions that are not much discussed. I don't know if they were known by Einstein or we just didn't bother to speak about them. But with my method using the ellipses, I get something more than the ordinary equations from relativity. So this is the speech I've given before, holography and relativity. And what I do is only to speak about special relativity. The general relativity is much more complicated, and I couldn't speak about that in the 40 minutes I am given here, but I would like to. So, in my view, if you have a person standing here giving you out a short pulse of light, and then after some while giving a short observation, that's named gated viewing, a short observation, a short pulse, you will only see things that are on this sphere here. Only the things on that sphere. But if I give a short pulse here and then make my observation at another point, then this circle is changed into an ellipse. And that is what we see in light in flight recordings. We put a laser point here, or a point laser here, and the observation there, and the reference mirror there, and I see everything on this ellipse. So this is a sphere of observation which is changed, in my view, changed into an ellipse of observation, the ellipsoid of observation, because the point source of light and the point of observation are moved. They are separated. And in holography, they are just two places on the table, on your holographic table. But in what happens in relativity, again, we say, we give a short pulse here. Your observation is a sphere. Here happens to be an object. But if you make the point, the give out the light here, and then you move very fast, almost at the speed of light, and make the observation there, what happens? It's the same thing as if they were stationary at two different points in space. So just because of the motion of the one who gives out the pulse and observes the pulse from there to there, his sphere observation is changed into an ellipsoid observation, and the object that there appears to be longer, to be outside this sphere, suddenly it appears to be inside the observation, because observation has changed. So what I say is, in relativity, the sphere of observation is elongated in the direction of movement. And that's all that happens. And therefore, things appear to be shorter, but they are not shorter. They just appear. Again, the sphere observation, the ellipse observation, the result that the one who is moving doesn't, if he doesn't know he's moving, he still thinks it is a sphere. So therefore, he simply thinks this is the shortening. And that is named the Lorentz contraction. It's very well known. It's spoken a lot about, but it's very difficult to observe. So that's the Lorentz contraction. And using very simple equations, we find it's the same as if these were two points in holography, or if there are two points separated because of a very high speed of the one who makes experiments. Einstein says that the speed of light is always constant in vacuum. And that is very strange. That means if the point source is moving, the speed of light is still the same. If the point of observation is moving, the speed of light is still the same. If the point of observation and point of illumination move in relation to each other, they still measure exactly the same speed of light, which is constant. It's very strange, very difficult to accept. And it is because we want to accept all that, if we want to accept that. We have to introduce the Lorentz contraction, we have to introduce that the speed of time changes and so on. That's a way to understand why it can be so. And it has been measured very much that it is true that the speed of light always appears to be constant in space if there is no gravity, in empty space. In material, they can make light move very slow. We have the reflective index, and they even can stop the light in materials. And that is holography, more or less. So the strange thing is, if we have an explosion, atomic explosion on the Earth, this is the Earth, it's moving in space, this is the Earth, and there at one point we give an explosion, so there will be a sphere of light going all directions from that explosion. We who stand on the Earth, we say that the center of that explosion is the same all the time. But those who are in space, they say that the center of explosion is there and the Earth is moving away from the center. So you have the feeling that the center of the spherical wave is always stationary in relation to the one who makes observation. So this is a car in a train or something. It can be moving in that direction. We give a short pulse of light here. If it is stationary, the one who's standing inside this car, he will see point source on that wall, on that wall, on that wall, on that wall, as the sphere is expanding. First point sources, and then they will see circles here on all the walls. Yes, it is expanding in all directions. But what happens if it is moving? Well, we who are stationary and look at that, we say this point, the center of the expanding wave, will be stationary in relation to us who are stationary, and this car would move away, and the result would be that it illuminates this wall first, and much later that wall. That would be rather obvious to us. If this is stationary and the car is moving, it must hit that wall first. But I say that this sphere is changed to an ellipsoid, and something is very important. I have perhaps not said so much before, but also the car will appear to have changed in size, and that the reason for that, the result of that would be that the one who is in the car, he will still see all the walls intersected at the same time by this sphere or this ellipsoid of waves. Maybe I'll go there. Sorry. I think I go back to here. So when you make the observation here, if this is holography, you see the different parts of the ellipse are at different distances from B, and therefore the path length of light is different for different parts of the ellipse. Even if they reach B at the same time, all the rays, the parts of the ellipse or the objects on the ellipse are recorded at different points of time, because this delay of the as the light moves in this direction will be different for different parts. So therefore, this can be said to be a sphere of simultaneity. Everything happens at the same time that this sphere will be observed at the same time. But what is observed here is things happening at different points of time. This is it's not a simultaneous observation anymore, because this length from the object to the observation will be different at different points of the ellipsoid. So there is a change, a difference in time along here. Now we go back to this spherical, apparently spherical wave we got when we studied this intersection, which we thought should be an ellipse. Well, if you look closer, we'll find it was an ellipse, because we put a coordinate system onto the screen that we studied, and if we count the squares here, we'll find that they do differ. So this is not spherical, this is not a circle, but it is an ellipse studied at such an angle that it appears to be circular. And that happens automatically. So if this point source of light, points of observation, and we make in space an ellipsoid with a string like that, and we study the intersection of this ellipsoid by the straight surface, the plane surface, we'll see an ellipse. There will be an ellipse here, but studied from one of the focal points, this ellipse appears to be a circle. Or study from that focal point of the ellipsoid, it still appears to be a circle. So that is quite strange, but it is a mathematical rule that says so, that it happens to be like that. And that is what we tried to have published in a mathematical paper. The intersection of a plane by a rotational symmetric ellipsoid appears circular when observed from any of its focal points. So that's why they are very spooky, these ellipsoids, because when you look at them in holography, you don't see that they are ellipsoids. They appear to be spheres. And the same in relativity. That's why you cannot measure your speed, a constant speed of yourself in a laboratory by doing optical experiments. Because then again we have this ellipsoid, and you always study it from the point of observation, which is the point B, which is one focal point of ellipsoids, and when study from the point of ellipsoids, everything appears to be spherical instead of ellipsoidal. So Einstein has the rule that if you are in a closed room, you cannot in any way measure the constant speed of that closed room. If you are in a train, you cannot in any way measure the velocity of that train without any contact to the outside. And if this was not true, then I would be wrong, or Einstein would be wrong. So it had to be true. And at last we had it published, plane intersections or rotational ellipsoids. We are three people who got that published in a mathematical journal. So we are very happy about that. And when we believe that, and when they believe that, we can go on with our ellipsoids. So again, this is the ellipsoid here in relativity. So time dilation is simply this distance divided by that distance. The Lorentz contraction is simply this distance divided by that distance. And it's only the triangle with a square triangle. What's the equation for that? A2 plus B2 equal to C2. Pythagoras. It's only the Pythagorean theorem that that gives all the equations in relativity. So we can use this. We study what happens to a spherical wave here. It goes out in all directions like that. If it is moving, we see the sphere is changed into an ellipsoid, and we just draw lines from intersection, for instance there, intersection of the sphere into the point of intersection of the ellipsoid, which is there, and then we get a new direction of rays. So all rays that are going outwards in this all directions, they change their direction because of the speed of the light source in relation to the observer, and they will be concentrated forwards. There are much fewer backwards, much more concentrated forwards, and that is a well-known effect. Thank you. A well-known effect you have seen in physics, when you make atomic experiments, that an object moving very fast, the light from that object concentrates forwards. And the same simple drawing here, we can find what happens to the lines of sight. Before we spoke about the rays going outwards, now we speak about the rays going inwards, which we can name line of sight. And the line of sight will be just opposite the line of light going outwards. So here they will concentrate it backwards instead if this is moving in this direction. And this causes aberration of stars. Then we see when the Earth is moving, the position of the stars appears a little moved. And that is because of this thing. And it gives exactly the same equations as well known before. Then we see what happens if we move and we give many pulses. A person is moving in this direction, giving one pulse there, another there, another there, another there, another there, and then he makes an observation here. What will he see about his surrounding? Let us have a wall here and see what happens to that wall. Well, it will appear to be not only rotated but also curved in a strange way. And this can be easily seen in light and flight recordings. So if this is a wave front, a flat wave front, I let the light move like that, and it moves like that, can we say? And it moves with the speed of light, because this is a wave front. When I make a recording from here, with light and flight recording, I will see it tilted, because it takes longer time for light to go there from to my eye than from there to my eye. Therefore, I see that point at another point of time than I see here. And the light has to move earlier from there to be able to reach to my eye at the same time as the light from there. And at the earlier time, this was further in that direction. So the result will be I see a flat surface tilted 45 degrees. If I look more closer to it, I'll find it's not only tilted, but it is curved into a paraboloid with my eye in the center. And the sphere is changed from a sphere into an ellipsoid, as you know before. And so this one is changed into a part of a paraboloid. And if we do this very closely and go from ellipsoids to spheres, we see this will be the deformation of flat surfaces. Flat surfaces like that, an observer is there, he's moving in this direction, but then he will see these things. These flat surfaces will instead be deformed in different ways. And you see the flat surfaces in front of him will appear to be more separated than they really are. Because of his velocity, they will appear to be more separated. Behind, they will appear to be more closer. And exactly as they pass by, they will appear to be Lorentz contracted, the way explained by Einstein in the Lorentz contraction. 2 minutes. Yeah, I like this picture. We'll try to have it too. We have a point source of light there, and we have time in this direction. So the point source grows into a sphere, and with time, we can say in two dimensions, it will shape like a cone. The cone is widening more and more. So this is a cone of light from a point source here. This is a point of observation. We could say that that is also a cone, because it's a point towards light is moving. Where they intersect, these two cones, that produces the ellipsoid I've been speaking about all the time. It's an ellipse here, but if these cones were three-dimensional, it should be an ellipsoid there. And I think we can go there. Now we are back where we started. So this ellipse can be shown as two sets of circular rings like this, with two different centers, just as I showed with the red and green in the beginning. And what are they, how are they caused? Well, we are just studying these two cones intersected by different points of time. So we'll say intersected by time surfaces that are flat like that. They produce this, and they produce this ellipsoid, just as I was speaking about. So we have got sort of way around, beginning with the moiré of the two sets of circles, to holography and to relativity, and back again. And that finishes my talk. Thank you so much.
So you see that holography, besides having practical and artistic side, it has great intellectual side. And I think in another minute, you won't have time to answer any questions. And I'm sorry, we don't have another evening, a lot of beers like I had with him, for you to explain to us the lateral Doppler effect. He has found another effect that we have not ever been detected through his theoretical analysis through holography. So holography can lead you to a lot of directions. And I think the deepest one is this one. Thank you so much. I'm not allowing questions because we need another hour. Okay. All right.